It's Monday, August 25th. I'm Jane Coaston, and this is What A Day, the show that is excited for the end of August, then a year of culture war nonsense. Cracker Barrel, Sydney Sweeney. Look, let's just get to September and move on. On today's show, President Donald Trump says Chicago is probably the next city to receive some unwanted assistance from the National Guard. And part of the so-called Epstein files arrive on Capitol Hill, all while the Department of Justice releases Ghislaine Maxwell's interview, clearing the president and a former president. Shocking. But let's start with liberalism. Yes, if you call yourself a liberal, I'm talking about you. On Friday, a center-left think tank called Third Way got some press because of a list it made. A list of words it thinks Democrats should stop using as part of an effort to appeal to everyday voters who do not know what an existential threat is. Here's CNN.
I want to give people some context on some other words and phrases that were in this memo. Body shaming, cisgender, holding space, incarcerated people, intersectionality, LGBTQIA+, pregnant people, systems of oppression, the unhoused.
Okay, so that's a lot of words I've heard from people who spend a lot of time on Blue Sky, and I say that as a Blue Sky user. As you might imagine, this list got a lot of attention online and elsewhere. Some saw it as sensible, a way to get Democrats to stop using terms that might appeal to college graduates, but might not work for voters who aren't. Others argued that the list was papering over the real issue for Democrats, policy. Personally, even if every elected Democrat on earth stopped saying cisgender, which is just a descriptor, Fox News will still find some Democratic Socialists of America members in Brooklyn using it and argue that they alone represent the Democratic Party. But the entire debate got me thinking. What are Democrats, and more broadly liberals, for? What do we believe? A new publication is trying to figure that out. The Argument, founded by former Atlantic staff writer Jerusalem Demsis, consists of a host of left-leaning writers and contributors all trying to answer the question, what is a liberal? I talked to Jerusalem about her work, liberalism, and what made her want to start a new media outlet in the year of our Lord 2025. Jerusalem, welcome to What A Day.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
You said recently in your video announcing the launch of The Argument, congratulations, by the way,
Thank you.
Liberals used to stand for things like the New Deal, voting rights, helping the poor, which I think, you know, most liberals are all pretty into still. But It seems like now a lot of what liberals do is stand against things. What did you mean by that when you were talking about that? And how did we get here?
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is like a critique that people used to make of conservatives in the late 20th century all the time, that they were basically defined as being not liberals, right? When you read Buckley's National Review, like his opening like a definition of like what conservatism is mostly like, I fucking hate liberals.
And right.
Like that's literally the whole thing.
Yeah.
And then you think
standing
about now.
Standing athwart history, yelling
history,
stop.
Yelling stop. And it's funny because like now you think about like who's yelling stop all the time, right? And like I'm yelling stop too. So like I get it. Like we're like, it both like there's too much going on that we feel like culture's moving really quickly in ways we don't like. Technology's progressing in ways we don't like. That our institutions are shifting in ways we don't like. And like, we go to protest and we say, we're upset about this. And we want it to stop. And like, of course, protest is always a part of the American fabric. But there's a level to which, too, when you think about a lot of my reporting, when it comes to NIMBYism in Democratic cities and opposing housing and clean energy construction and opposing, you know, a transit stops being built in your neighborhoods. I mean, you're in Los Angeles. Karen Bass's come out against legislation that would make it easier to build housing near transit. So like, this has become, I think, an increasing definition of what it means to be a liberal in the modern era is that you're kind of opposed to stuff. And the biggest version of this, of course, is that liberalism largely means you're anti-Trump now, right? And I'm anti-Trump. I think that he is the greatest threat to American democracy. But at the same time, I'm more than that. Like, we have an ideology that used to really animate people across the political spectrum. And liberalism wasn't just being left-wing. It was a belief in individualism and respect for human rights and all of these different great principles. And to me, like, we've really lost our way for a few reasons. One is that liberalism became dominant in a way that was always going to inspire backlash from people.
Right.
But I think also in many respects, like liberals got soft at arguing for their point, things just felt so obvious. Like, of course there's a consensus that immigration is good for the economy. Of course there's a consensus that we need to be defending individualism and free speech. We felt like there was an elite consensus around these ideas.
And that, like, the arc of history bent in our direction, that this would just all obviously happen. And it's interesting you talk about kind of liberalism being standing against things, because right now you have a swath of the right that is basically whatever liberals do, we hate it, which is why that they're now sounding like they want to, you know, wax rhapsodic about the magical year of like 2003. But I think it's important to establish in this conversation, how are you defining liberalism? Like, we're not necessarily talking about Democrats or progressives, or are we? Are we talking about both? Neither? Who are we talking about?
Yeah, I mean, this is like the longest Twitter thread in history. Like, moderators are screaming at us to stop. Yeah, I know, I'm like
the Reddit thread. Oh my God.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, to me, I wrote our intro essay on the Argument Mag's website about this, which is liberalism is a political philosophy that seeks to answer the question, how do we live with each other? And that's like, how do we live with each other when we're all really, really different? Like, when my version of a good life could be having a million one-night stands and someone else's is that they shouldn't have sex until they get married. Or my version of a good life is that I live in a city and I have public transit and I walk to work, and someone else's is that they live in a rural part of the country and like they're very religious. I mean, these are big differences that are not just like stylistic. They often have to do with our fundamental beliefs about what it is to be a good person. And we have to like exist together. And I think that the post-liberal right, and also honestly the post-liberal left's answer has often been to say, we can't actually live together. You need to change your mind and be like me. And liberalism says, no, like we can live in a pluralistic society. And, you know, I think in many respects, the post-liberal right in particular, they so thoroughly believe that you can't live with people that are different than you, that they're trying to eradicate that difference as much as possible. And our rejoinder, I think, at the argument is that no matter how homogenous you think you can make a population, there will always be differences that humans are willing to kill each other over. Like, literally, it doesn't matter.
This is the story of Europe for like
800
years was just
I mean, liberalism comes out of the European wars of religion. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you have people who are like, you're Protestant, but not the right kind of Protestant.
Exactly.
It's also interesting because I feel as if the belief that we can't live together is one of those things where it's like we have, you know, nearly 250 years of evidence in the United States that actually we can live together and people can sort themselves in ways that work best for them. But you said something I thought was really interesting in a conversation with another writer who you're working with at the argument, Kelsey Piper, basically that liberals are not temporarily embarrassed communists. Can you explain your thinking behind that?
There are so many reasons we could get into why it's happened, but there is a sense within liberalism and liberal thought, in particular, just like anyone who's left of center, that you're constantly afraid of someone to your left telling you that you're insufficiently left-leaning. And as a result, you stop articulating anything you believe. Everyone just kind of starts defaulting to like, okay, whatever the most like radical left thing that's being said, we're all just going to default towards that norm. And it's created this weird thing where like, I mean, I'm in a lot of left spaces where like people will secretly say things that I think are just completely reasonable. They are also caring about egalitarianism and equality. They just are saying like, oh, like maybe I have a different way of going about this, or I have questions about how this should go. But they would never say this in public because they're afraid of actually saying these views and getting called out for them.
Right, right. Which is, I think that that goes also to kind of the siloing effect, because some of these views are like, I think that maybe sometimes some people should go to prison. And so I think that that's a really interesting point, that there is a difference between being a liberal and being a leftist.
I think honestly, like leftists get very upset about this all the time. And I get it why they're so irritated, because they're like, you guys are lying about your actual ideological beliefs. And it's creating this weird friction here where like you won't admit the things you believe or stand for them. You're just sort of like yelling it. We're all just pretending like we're all the same thing. And again, liberalism does not mean that you are a moderate, right? Like Mills Rawls, these are, like, to me, essentially socialists, right? Even if they didn't use those words, they're extremely radical thinkers. You can also have someone who's a liberal who wants to find ways to respect individual rights and who cares about the systems of democracy and governance that would actually make it possible for, like, different kinds of people to live together. And I think the really big thing that we're trying to do with the argument is just say, like, the most important cleavage in American politics is not whether you're right or left. It's whether you hold these, like, actually, like, bigger beliefs about how people can live together despite the differences we have.
I have to ask, Jerusalem, why create a new media company in 2025? Mm-hmm. Like, what do you think is missing from the discourse? And what do you think the argument can be doing that's better than what we have?
Well, no one else had ever created a media company, so I thought that I would be the first.
Nope, it's never happened.
Nobody's
ever done it.
Well, aside from the novelty bit, I think that the difference that the argument can make is the difference that I think a lot of ideological small media outlets have made in American history. When we look at places like the New Republic or even the National Review, these are small outfits that are not trying to be mass media organizations. What they're trying to do is change how ideology is conceived of in the American both electorate, but also in the American elite. And that, to me, is the big question right now. All of our liberal media is now, you know, the New York Times, the Atlantic, The New Yorker. These are massive companies that are trying to do general purpose work. And they do great work. They do great reporting, great essays. I'm glad that they exist. But at the same time, like, I'm very, very worried that these smaller magazines and ideological outfits that exist are not advancing an alternative to post-liberalism. And so my goal is to provide that alternative. And, like, who knows how this all plays out. I mean, largely people who work in the ideas game like we do are at the whim of whatever politician ends up actually winning. But I do think there is a lot of evidence that when we platform these ideas, when you make clear arguments for the stuff that you care about, it is the only way that someone could ever end up picking those up in 4 years, 8 years, 10 years, and actually using them. I think that one of the best examples of this is just when I see the nascent abundance movement coming up, which is, you know, the, you know, book by Ezra Klein and Derek Thompson. These ideas were ones that had been pushed for years by a lot of people and a lot of activists on the ground. And now it's part of a massive national political conversation. And I remember talking to political scientists years ago, like, hey, do you ever think that, like, being pro-housing in this way could ever really take on a national valence? And they were kind of just like, no, this is like an impossible problem. You can never solve this problem. Like, no one would ever do this. It's so politically unpalatable. And I'm just witnessing now that, like, no, a lot of people were like, yes, it's really unpopular, and I'm going to really just fight for the thing I believe in. And now there's, like, a real chance that it becomes a bigger shift in our politics. And I think that everyone who believes strongly in how to make the world a better place should do what they can to say the things they believe in.
You can just do things.
You can just do things.
Jerusalem, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
That was my conversation with Jerusalem Demsis. She's the CEO and founder of The Argument. We'll link to it in our show notes. We'll get to more of the news in a moment, but if you like the show, make sure to subscribe, leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, watch us on YouTube, and share with your friends. More to come after some ads. What Today is brought to you by the Freedom From Religion Foundation. What do we mean when we talk about freedom of religion? Because lately, freedom looks a lot like forcing religion into public schools. Mandatory Ten Commandments, school chaplains, and vouchers that send public money to private religious institutions. The Freedom From Religion Foundation says that's not religious freedom. That's government-endorsed faith, and it violates the Constitution. FFRF fights for everyone's right to believe, or not, without coercion, especially in our schools. Learn more and get involved at ffrf.us/school or text the word church to 511-511. Go to ffrf.us/school or text the word church to 511-511. Text the word church to 511-511. Let's protect a freedom that belongs to everyone. Text fees may apply.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month, so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit. Track budgets and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This is the new Weight Watchers, built for real life and real results, no matter what mode you're in. Maddie went all in for her big day and lost 33 pounds. Emily lost 85 pounds and hit her goal while still living her life.
Weight Watchers gave me the tools and I feel amazing.
Join the millions of members and lose weight with the number one doctor-recommended weight loss program.
I'm able to live my life and still hit my goals.
Lose more at weightwatchers.com.
Here's what else we're following today.
Headlines.
Kilmar Abrego-Garcia returned home to Maryland Friday. You might remember he's a Salvadoran immigrant who entered the U.S. illegally to escape gang violence. He'd held a work permit since 2019. In March, he was deported to El Salvador, despite a court order that was supposed to prevent that. He's been back in U.S. detention since June, facing human smuggling charges that he's denied. His story's not over, though. Minutes after leaving custody Friday, U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement informed Abrego-Garcia's attorneys that he would be deported to Uganda early this week. He's expected to appear in an ICE field office today. Abrego-Garcia's lawyers say the Trump administration's threat to remove him to Uganda was designed to force him to plead guilty to the human smuggling charges. According to his lawyers, the Department of Justice offered Abrego-Garcia another option, one that would have landed him in Costa Rica, where he could live as a free man, if he agreed to plead guilty to the human smuggling charges against him and stay in jail over the weekend. That plea deal, which Abrego-Garcia declined, expires today. Plead guilty to a crime you say you didn't commit and go to Costa Rica. Don't plead guilty and go to Uganda. And remember, no option to stay with your family. That's fucked up.
We should continue to support local law enforcement and not simply allow Donald Trump to play games with the lives of the American people as part of his effort to manufacture a crisis and create a distraction because he's deeply unpopular.
Democratic House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries criticized President Trump Sunday for threatening to deploy the National Guard to Chicago. Jeffries made those comments during an appearance on CNN's State of the Union. So far, Trump has deployed the National Guard to Los Angeles and Washington, D.C. On Friday, Trump had claimed that Chicago residents clamored for troops, too.
The people in Chicago, Mr. Vice President, are screaming for us to come. They're wearing red hats, just like this one. But they're wearing red hats. African-American ladies, beautiful ladies, are saying, please, President Trump, come to Chicago.
Sure they are. Every beautiful African-American lady is wearing a red hat in Chicago because they just can't get enough of President Trump and they want the National Guard to come. Sure. Democratic Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker hit back. In a statement released Saturday, he said, quote, "There is no emergency that warrants the President of the United States federalizing the Illinois National Guard, deploying the National Guard from other states, or sending active duty military within our own borders."
It's a yes or no question, Mr. Foreign Minister. Do you acknowledge Russia invaded Ukraine?
I said to you that we started special military operations.
So, yes.
Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov set for a sometimes tense interview that aired on NBC's Meet the Press Sunday morning. Lavrov defended Russia's actions in Ukraine. He said Russia is serious about peace, and he blamed Ukraine for a lack of progress since President Trump's meeting with President Putin earlier this month.
We want peace in Ukraine. He wants, President Trump wants peace in Ukraine. The reaction to Anchorage meeting, the gathering in Washington of these European representatives and what they were doing after Washington indicates that they don't want peace.
Lavrov said there is no meeting between Putin and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky currently planned, at least until Zelensky considers land swaps and a potential pledge to stay out of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, or NATO. The Russian foreign minister also denied that Russia targeted civilian sites like schools and hospitals in Ukraine, despite many, many reports to the contrary. He also had a fascinating take on an airstrike on an American-owned factory in Ukraine.
This is an electronics factory, though, sir. This is an electronics factory. I've spoken to people on the ground there. It builds coffee machines, among other electronics. This is not a military site.
Well, I understand that some people are really naive, and when they see a coffee machine in the window, they believe that this is the place where coffee machines are produced. Our intelligence has very good information.
Ukraine celebrated its Independence Day Sunday. In a video address, Zelensky declared the country, quote, needs a just peace, a peace where our future is decided only by us. Transcripts and tape from an interview of Ghislaine Maxwell by the Department of Justice were released Friday and have been making their way across the internet. Maxwell is the former girlfriend and collaborator of disgraced financier and convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. She's serving a 20-year prison sentence on sex trafficking charges. In the interview, Maxwell said Trump had been, quote, friendly with Epstein in the 1990s and 2000s, but was also, quote, a gentleman in all respects. She added that she never saw inappropriate behavior from other former Epstein associates, like Bill Clinton, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., and Prince Andrew. As for Epstein himself, Maxwell denied hearing of any sexual misconduct committed by Epstein or his acquaintances.
In the entire time I was with him or friends with him or had anyone, no one ever reported to me or came to me and said that anything inappropriate happened or was upset by it. I never saw any of that.
Wow, so Jeffrey Epstein was just a rich guy who did absolutely nothing and nothing ever happened? Wild! Family members of one of Epstein's accusers said they were outraged by the Justice Department's decision to release the transcripts, saying the department gave Maxwell a, quote, platform to rewrite history. They have a point. In one section of the interview, Deputy U.S. Attorney General Todd Blanche sounds exasperated after feebly pushing against Maxwell's claims.
And when you say no one ever reported to me, meaning like the masseuses or
never.
Any of the house staff?
Never.
Or the clients?
Or the clients themselves?
Never.
Okay.
Hard-hitting interview tactics from our Department of Justice. Great job, Todd. And that's the news. Before we go, money, murder, betrayal, revenge. This is the unbelievable true story of the United Mine Workers of America and the son who took on a dangerous union boss to avenge his family's murder. In the newest season of Shadow Kingdom, Coal Survivor, host Niccolo Mannoni digs into the rise and fall of the United Mine Workers of America under Tony Boyle, once the most powerful and corrupt labor leader in the country. At the height of America's coal wars, it's a political thriller wrapped in a courtroom drama, and every detail is real. The first two episodes are out now. Listen on the Shadow Kingdom feed wherever you get your podcasts. Or, better yet, Friends of the Pod subscribers can listen to the full season of Shadow Kingdom right now. Join Friends of the Pod at crooked.com/friends or subscribe through the Shadow Kingdom Apple feed. That's all for today. If you like the show, make sure you subscribe, leave a review, congratulate tennis great Venus Williams on returning to the U.S. Open, and tell your friends to listen. And if you're into reading, and not just about how Venus Williams debuted at the U.S. Open at the age of 17 in 1997, and is back playing at the U.S. Open tonight at the age of 45, like me, What A Day is also a nightly newsletter. Check it out and subscribe at crooked.com/subscribe. I'm Jane Costin, and I turned 10 3 days after Venus Williams appeared in her first U.S. Open final. I am no longer 10. What A Day is a production of Crooked Media. It's recorded and mixed by Desmond Taylor. Our associate producer is Emily Four. Our video editor is Joseph Dutra. Our video producer is Johanna Case. We had production help today from Greg Walters, Matt Berg, Shauna Lee, and Gina Pollack. Our senior producer is Erica Morrison, and our senior vice president of news and politics is Adrian Hill. We had help with our headlines from the Associated Press. Our theme music is by Colin Gilliard and Kashaka. Our production staff is proudly unionized with the Writers Guild of America East.
If you guys like Positive America, please consider subscribing to our Friends of the Pod program. So Friends of the Pod get lots of stuff. You get more Positive America. That includes our new show, which is called Positive America Only Friends.
It's where Dan gets naked.
Where Dan gets full frontal nudity, but mostly it's a bi-weekly subscription-exclusive podcast that is basically Positive America, but behind a paywall. So it's a little bit looser and more fun. And it's Lovett and Favreau and me and Pfeiffer and then other crooked hosts. We go deeper on the news and cover more stories. You also get Open Tabs, which is a weekly behind-the-scenes newsletter from the show. Plus, you get ad-free episodes of your favorite crooked podcasts and all kinds of other stuff. Dan will come to your house and clean it once every quarter.
Yeah, clothed.
Dan is very busy, clothed only. But along with just getting great content, becoming a friend of the pod, joining our subscription community is the number one thing you can do to help us grow, to help independent progressive media. So if you've ever thought about doing it, if you ever wanted more Pod Save America, consider going to crooked.com/friends and becoming a friend of the pod.
This is the new Weight Watchers. It works for members like JoJo, who's learning simple, healthy habits, Sharia, who's making progress with meds, and Kim, who still gets to eat what she loves. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now, it's your turn. Watch your life open up. Watch your story shift. Watch what you're capable of. Watch it work. Get started today at WeightWatchers.com.